You see, in my partner, when his inner child plays out, even though he may not know or is more comfortable ignoring it, how can I support him in the best way? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is there's a lot of, in psychology, we would say that what is healthy, actually healthy in a relationship, is that you find that between you and your partner, sometimes it's father-daughter, mother-son, you know, is playing out, you know, sometimes it's lover-beloved, sometimes it's brother-sister, that it's very fluid, actually. But hopefully the majority of the relationship is kind of in the present. The two adults have an adult relationship, but everyone has an inner child, you know? And so then the question is, whether when the inner child becomes dominant or is triggered, the important thing is whether that invokes in the partner someone who's compatible with that, or someone who is has kind of a tenacious or negative relationship with that part of the partner, right? And so hopefully it's all very fluid. In other words, when the partner is behaving kind of in a childlike way, or needs a special childlike attention, you kind of almost unnoticeably just be the good mother, you know. It's almost so fluid, it's almost unnoticeable. It's not really a problem either. And sometimes you're just so close, you're like brother and sister. You know, so there's all different types of transference taking place because we have all of these parts inside of us. I guess the problem would come if your partner is always the child. And so always in the relationship, there's the little child is always invoked, or he tends to fall, or she tends to fall into that space. In a relationship, it becomes you always find yourself being the mother and never just, you know, being in a relationship. Or you find yourself always taking yourself as a woman, taking the little girl position, and your partner taking the father position. And that's also, if that becomes dominant, you don't feel very good in that relationship. But if these things, you know, the father, daughter, mother, son, is something you can expect that it will happen because we have those inner children in us. It's just, we don't want it to be dominant. Like, say that's all that's happening, then you won't be very happy in the relationship. So if he has a tendency to always become the child, or you have a tendency to always become the child, then honestly I think that's when it would be good to seek therapy. And the reason is because in the therapy you can play out those child needs with your therapist and also deal with that in a healthy way. And so let that little child grow. So those type of needs don't become dominant in your relationship. So that's a good reason to be in therapy. If you're with your partner and it's like you're not always in that role of being the father or the mother, the father to to the little girl, you know, who's being played out, or the mother to the little boy who continually plays out. If it's just something that happens at time and you both have a certain level of consciousness, then you're able to say something like, you know, you're sounding like your little boy. You're sounding like your little boy. And they know what the little boy means, you know. If you said something like that, they have some consciousness around that. You can say, what do you think's really going on there? And then you can have a discussion like that because you both know about it. But what if you both don't know about it and you know about it, but he has no clue, has no consciousness around it, you know? Then I would say it depends on how dominant it is. Because if it's going to be there, because it's there for all of us, it should be just fluid, and primarily it should be the two adults. I don't know. It depends on the partner also, whether say he knows nothing about it, if he's receptive to even hearing about anything like that from you. So that's hard. I'd probably talk personally with you about that to find out what all that inside scoop, what's going on. But I think the important thing to know is that changing of roles, the psyche, you know, there's many, many ages and whatnot in the psyche, and that it is going to be fluid in a relationship. It's just that you don't want it to be stuck in just one level where you're always the mother. You're always the father. It's not just, it doesn't feel right, doesn't feel good. You won't be very happy in that situation. So. Is it possible to get the vision without loving ourselves from the intellect only? Well, yes, because the thing is that this not loving yourself has to do with inner child work and not feeling loved as a child, you know. And so you even come into the adult life where, and this is true for so many people in the Western cultures, they don't feel loved, you know. So that little child has to learn to feel loved because you love her, you know, and you re-raise her or him with love and with, you know, making that child recognize I am loved and I am wanted. But you do that by the way you internally hold that child and with the things that you say, you know, to the little girl or little boy, all the things that would have been wonderful if they'd been said to you, you get a chance to say them now, you know. So even though that scar can remain, it doesn't remain as some sort of obstacle so that you can't get knowledge. In fact, it becomes a beautiful thing because you do gain knowledge and you do gain that source of love, which is your own being. And then you can bring the little child, that being is the being of the little child also, the little child who doesn't feel loved. That is the self, right, the self. And so you can put the little child that, sometimes when we had a couple of meditations like this, you put that little child or those feelings right in your heart, you know. And then you just be yourself and let yourself, it's yourself penetrates your body, mind, sense organs, you are that, you know. And then you are that for the little child also. And so let her also come on a deeper level, you know, because even if you don't feel loved, you're still the Atma, right? Yourself still is the very source of love itself. And so it's a feeling that you have because as a little one, you didn't get the type of holding that you needed and the attention that you needed to feel that you were loved and wanted, which is very common. It's not like you're alone. We're all dealing with it. You know, very few people actually in the West, as opposed to some place like in the East, like in India, where all attention and all love is given to those little children. I mean, they are the center of your life in just the most amazing, beautiful way. And you see them walking around as these confident little people. They're 3 years old and they're just walking around like they're just a well-formed little entity who's very important in life. It's the sweetest thing. But our culture doesn't, especially, I mean, in the United States, that's really not there. It's not that the children aren't loved, but they're not the center of attention like they need to be. In fact, I remember once when Swamiji was first coming to the States, Pooja Swamiji, he was shocked when he would see over and over again as he was traveling in the car, the father and mother in the front, and the kids in the back by themselves. He couldn't believe it. He could not believe it. Why wasn't the mother in the back with her children being with them, you know? They must be so lonely and frightened back there. And the mother and father are just in their own world up in the front. And that was absolutely unheard of. And in fact, I was shocked that he was shocked. Because I had never even thought of why would she want to be in the back with her kids? But he was shocked and flabbergasted almost. It was really kind of, he felt really badly for the little children. And then I used to notice in India how, I noticed one family in particular that I happened to be close with, and she had two little girls. And I knew those little girls since infancy, since being born. And then I saw they came to the ashram. This was in the 70s, and these kids are all adults now. But she came with her little girls, and it was like a mama duck with her ducklings. Mm-hmm. Those little girls were always with her, holding on to her skirt on one side or the other, holding on to her sari, or holding on to her hands, or when she would sit down, sitting down right with her, right next to her, always, really, they're like little ducklings. You know? And she was always herding her little children, you know. They were never apart, you know. And it was the sweetest little thing, and those little girls were so happy and so confident, and they were just always, they were a threesome. The mom and the two little girls, they were a threesome, and I can't even imagine the mother being without her little ducklings. It would not happen. They were together. Those kids were with her, and they were so confident and so happy and so secure. It was really beautiful. You know, they were so just abounding in love. They couldn't be more filled with love. And you notice what that does to a child, how full they are, you know, how secure, how happy they are, how much themselves they are, you know. And we don't get filled up like that, you know. Our parents are distracted and busy, and they also didn't get that when they were growing up. I'm the same way, so we have to reparent the little ones inside and fill them up like that, which Bhagawan gave us that capacity, that backup. We have that backup, these backup systems in place. If the first time around failed, we have this backup system, you know, where you can actually, on an imaginal level, give that to yourself, give that to that little girl, and change the constellation there. So that's what we have to, that's what we have to do. So we can bypass that and get this vision, but that will always also be a hurt inside. And so since there's a way for us to take care of it, you know, and it's kind of that psychological level of the psyche, then we would take care of it because we want to. Yeah. There's no reason not to take care of it. And it's also that you don't get rid of the scars of your hurts, but the scars are not pussy and infected, you know. But the experiences that you've had in the past, it's not that they go away. It's just that they're not causing you pain, even though the scar is still there. In a way, those scars are give you depth, gives you a depth of experience, because you've had the experience, the scar is still there, it's not that you've forgotten it, it's just that you've healed from it. Yeah. But you don't lose your memory. What is the valve, the value, not value, valve is V-A-L-V-E, and value is V-A-L-U-E, it's value, okay? what is the value meaning of celibacy for a Swami? The brahmacharya, or the taking the celibacy, is part of sannyasa, taking that vow of sannyasa. There's a lot of in the, any type of sexual relationship or a marriage commitment which involves that type of closeness, there's so much attachment, right? And so that attachment pulls your mind out into samsara, in a way, that's the thought. So maybe the life that you want when you take sannyasa, you don't want to have to deal with the world on that level, you know? You are ready at that time now just basically to be alone and be your own person in the world, where you're kind of attached equally to everybody in a sense and attached to no one. You know, and that way you can spend your life in contemplation and study, and you're free to go here and there. Your psyche isn't bound to these type of relationships and children and all of that. But I think what's important to understand, and people understand this more and more, is that because that sannyasa vow means you're ready to just be alone with Ishwara, you're married to Ishwara in a way, you know, you're not pulled out into the world. You should be really ready for that, and not trying to jump over having deep committed relationships and experience that part of life, you know, and to actually go through all of that. And there's pain in it, and there's beauty in it, and there's also a maturity that takes place having had those experiences, that it's really important. And say you take sannyasa, like which happens in India, at a young age, take brahmachari, which you're also celibate, you take that in your 20 or 18, 19, 20, 22, and then you move right into sannyasa, and you've never had the opportunity to have an intimate relationship, to really love someone and have somebody really love you and experience that, all of that. Then there's what happens is there's a tremendous kind of longing for that, especially when you get to around 40 and you've missed the whole thing, especially for a man when that sexual energy is so strong and you're trying to sublate it all the time. It's just pouring out of all of the cracks, you know, and then you're trying to sneakily have some little semblance of a relationship. But that's because you've never had that, you know, and so you're not in a position to give that up because you've never had it. And so the body and the psyche are longing for that type of experience. So Swamiji has started to, he's not wanting to give sannyasa to people who are too young that hadn't had any experience of life. So that's one way to look at that. And then the other thing is, a lot of jnanis have families. You can have a family and children and become a jnani. It just means that you accept those attachments. Like, say, if I have attachment to somebody, I have self-knowledge, I have attachment to somebody. I have attachment to my dog, Lucky. He's my samsara. But honestly, whether it was Lucky or a husband or children or whatever it is, I don't mind. I don't mind if I have that attachment. It wouldn't bother me. I don't care, you know. I don't feel like I would become more or less in my own freedom, in my own self, you know, by the people or the people that surround me, or the children that surround me, or the animals that surround me, and the people I care about. I like all that. I don't mind it. And the attachment that you can have as a jnani, it's a mitya attachment. It's what we call dugdha bija. But dugdha bija means a burnt seed. It's like you have a desire, but it's a burnt seed. Because if the desire isn't fulfilled, then that's fine. That's a dugdha bija. It's a burnt seed. You have the desire, but it can't sprout. So that makes, we call that, that kind of raga dvesha is mitya. Because it doesn't have any hold on you. And so you can have attachments, because the attachments, like say if you have children, you think if you gain knowledge, all of a sudden you have no special attachment for your children. That just is not going to happen because it's so natural, you know. But and it's built in. But at the same time, there's a certain dagda bija. Bija means seed, and dagda means burnt, past passive participle, dagda from da, dagda, and then bija, burnt seed. You know, so those attachments are Ishwara. They have their own beauty, you know. But as the things don't work out, or your child isn't perfect and is having temper tantrums and, you know, going through the teenage years and all of that, you just try to help them, you know. You love them, you care about them, you're attached to them. But, you know, they belong to Ishwara too, you know. So you have much more capacity to let them be free, and also to accept the pain that they cause you. Because attachment causes pain, causes a lot of joy. You're willing for those vrittis. You're willing to experience the vrittis that attachment causes. See what I mean? So it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't hurt your knowledge. It doesn't hurt your being. You know, it's just giving the mind a set of experiences that you're willing to have. As opposed to thinking that you have to escape those experiences. I think that's important to understand. And I think in India it's been a huge problem, just like it is in the Catholic Church, where celibacy is part to become like a priest. You have to be celibate. To become a sannyasi, you have to be celibate. And you know, young people become celibate before they're at all ready for that. And then they have a lot of torment, a lot of guilt, a lot of kind of breaking the rules and having secret relationships, you know, secret rendezvous, so to speak. All of them, you know. So that shows there's something wrong. You're imposing something on young people that are not at all ready for that, you know. And you also shouldn't take it, because if you think it's going to give you moksha or something like that, will help you on your way to moksha, won't help you at all. Not at all. You know, if you're ready for that because of your age and your experiences, and you don't want to be encumbered, you know, by those responsibilities and commitments and the needs of your partner and children upon you, and there's a way for you to ethically take sannyasa, then you can do that, you know. But to do that because you think it will help you get moksha before you've had any type of experience at all, it'd probably be just what we call a pratibandhaka, an obstruction. You know, it's better to live your life and gain knowledge within the life that you've been given, and then let sannyasa be a natural expression that comes at the appropriate time. So that's how Swamiji talks about it now, and that's what I believe to be true. I was in India for many, many years. I saw all the problems that so many, I don't know how many exceptions there are, none that I know of. I mean, difficulty, a lot of difficulty, a lot of stress, a lot of suffering, because especially if you're an Indian, Indians know what each other is doing all of the time. They're always looking, always watching. And then you're having all of these urges and needs and everything. It's torture. All these young guys are being tortured. Anyway. Swamiji even asked me, because they can't talk about all these things, about sex and everything, intimacy. They just can't. It's not in their culture. He's a sannyasi. He just cannot do it. So last, you talk to them. Okay, so I'm just going to talk to them. I'm starting to recognize some of my projections, and when I do, I feel unable to do something about it. I try to stay with it and accept it, but still I feel that I'm creating a dharmic situation because of my projections and thoughts toward that person. Can you please talk around this situation? Well, one thing you can do is when you become aware that you are projecting, or that you suspect you are projecting, what I think is useful, there's two, you can tackle it in at least two ways that I'm thinking of. One is that you go in and have a conversation with yourself, the one who is projecting on this person and feeling maybe rejecting or feeling negative toward this person. Or I'm assuming it's negative, but so let's say it's negative, feeling negative toward the person. Then you go in and you have a conversation with yourself and you say, what's really going on? Just tell me what you really don't like about this person. Forget about it being a projection or anything. What is it that you really don't like? What is really bothering you? And then that will tell, your mind will tell you what it is. And just try to get it all out. Everything that you don't like, or everything that is bothering you about the person or the situation. And then you can say something like, well, tell me why that's bothering you. What difference does it make? What is so hurtful about that, you know? Or what is so upsetting about that? And then let that part talk. Well, because it makes me feel like this and this and this, and it makes me angry or whatever. Everything that you feel, then you let that part say everything that you feel about it. And then see if you can recognize who's who in that projection. Because you've already called it a projection, or you think it's a projection. If it is a projection, then that dyad, you and the other, right? Because the projection involves two people, involves you and whoever you're projecting upon. That dyad exists somewhere in you. Like, would that dyad be a father-child or mother-child? Or would it be a teacher? Or would it be brother-sister? What happened where this type of an experience was something that you lived through? And now you're projecting. Because if it's a projection, that's going to be there. It's got its roots somewhere in your unconscious. Otherwise, you can't project it. Right? Project it means it's in there in the unconscious. So you just kind of try to trace it back to what really is who you're really angry at, or who you're really projecting, who it is that you're projecting onto that person. And then you find yourself having the same feelings that you used to have when you were little. So that is helpful to start breaking the projection. And then you can tell the little one inside, say, you know, this person is not your dad, or this person, you know, is so-and-so, not this person, you know. I understand all of those feelings, as all of those feelings did happen. But this is not that person, so we don't want to treat him or her like that. And kind of have that conversation. Okay. So then you have this type of conversation to try to pull back the projection off of this dyad, you know. And then, if you find yourself habitually acting in kind of a negative way or pushing this person away, try to say something nice or say something neutral. It does not mean, this is what Swamiji used to tell me to do when I had some problems like this. It doesn't mean going and being best friends with a person or having even a long conversation. It just means greeting that person in a way that you normally don't. It could be even just walking by and saying, ah, hi, how are you? In a normal way, in a way that you've avoided doing. Change the way that you are responding to that person. Even if it's only in a slight way that doesn't take much time, because you may be afraid to do that because you don't want to get involved. You know what I mean? But you just do it for your own sake. Some simple greeting of some sort and move on. But you'll see that when you do that, something changes in the psyche. Because you, by doing that, first of all, you've had this dialogue. And then by doing that, you break out of that projected spell of projection in terms of the grooves that you've set up in your brain. So you do something, say something differently than what you normally would. And that will help, at least in my experience. So when you feel something, unable to do something about it, well, first of all, that inner child work is helpful. But this feeling unable to do something about it, I totally understand that, because when that projection is there, Swamiji used to tell me, you know, you just go walk by, just say hi, nothing else. I couldn't. Nope. I was unable to do that. It took me several days of forcing myself before I made myself do that. Amazing, you know, that it would be like that. So tenacious. It was a really negative projection. It's really, you know, no, wouldn't do it. I went back to him a couple of times. I said, I just can't, Swamiji. You do it. Do it. You just do it. It's not a big deal. You just walk by and say hi. Okay. But you know, when I did, something broke inside. It's like the spell broke. Even though it was hard to make myself do that, it broke a spell. And I learned a huge lesson, just a huge lesson. Then I started, even though that was, for a while, that was a hard thing for me to do, it became very simple. When I would feel that I was in a projection, I would just do something like that. Because I gained the skill. I didn't have the skill. I was too afraid or too caught in the projection. I didn't have a strong enough little part of me saying, you know, this could be a projection. You know, I couldn't make myself do it. But the results of doing that, the punya, the karma, I mean, the karma pala from doing that is so great that you learn that skill. And that really is very, very powerful to have that skill. You know, because you can break out of this, you can easily break out of projection just by doing that, something that you would not normally do. Yeah, it just vanishes. It may come back, but for the time being it vanishes, and then it may come back, but then you just do it again, it vanishes, and then it's gone after a few times. So that's what I would do and have done. Can you please talk more about our binding likes and dislikes? Well, when we say raga dvesha, that's a binding like and dislike. And what makes it binding is this feeling, I want this so that I can be happy. What makes it binding is this so that I can be happy, right? If it's unbinding, I want this, but if I don't get it, that's fine. Right? Those likes and dislikes are, like Jnani has all those. Because why would I choose this over that? I prefer this to that. I like that. I would like to have that. I'm sorry you can't have that. Okay, well, I'll have that. That's non-binding. There's no problem. Binding is that when I don't get what I want, then I really react to that because I need that to be happy. Like that's what we mean by a like or dislike, or binding like or dislike. I need it in order for me to be happy. And then when I don't get it, I can feel hurt, frustrated, very angry. It can feel like my whole life has been ruined. It goes on and on and on. I can take it all the way to hell, you know, because I had such a strong binding desire. And it can be in the negative also. Like if this person continues to be in my life, I'm finished. I would rather sell everything and leave the state. That's a pretty binding dislike. Yeah. So we don't want that, right? We want to be able to say, well, that's difficult, but it's okay. This person is difficult in my life. It's okay. I don't mind. Because there are difficult people in your life, people, you know, who are hard to deal with, but you can say it's okay. I don't mind. It's not like I get into some, like, it's, otherwise it's like saying, oh, there's difficult people in my life. They're not supposed to be there. It's like saying, oh, there are difficult situations in life. That's not right. That's absurd. That's ridiculous. So there are there's difficult people. There's difficult situations. There's happy situations. There's all kinds of situations, all kinds of people. They're all Bhagavan, you know? So you're, if to the degree that your ananda isn't totally projected onto them, then it's a difficult situation or a difficult person. You have to handle it. But your ananda is not at stake. Your well-being is not at stake. And you're not asking that person to make you happy by their absence. And if you are, you know, then I think there's work to be done. You know, if you think that you have to, in order for you to be happy, you can only have a certain constellation of people, then in that particular arena, you're caught by samsara. You're caught by your binding likes and dislikes. I think it's better and more realistic to know that always in life there will be difficult situations and difficult people and difficult things, all kinds of difficult things. And so it's just a matter of handling them, you know. And there's also all kinds of very, very happy things and people who are good friends to you and just joyous times. But there's not only that. And so you can't just live half a life. You have to have the skill to be with all of it. You have to have the skill to be able to objectively handle the difficult situations and difficult people, not just the skill to enjoy. I have such wonderful skills to enjoy all of the beautiful, happy situations that come my way. It's only the difficult situation. Yeah. So it's also kind of enjoying your growing capacity to objectively handle difficult situations and not think that they're not supposed to be there, you know, because that's not realistic. And I think as a mumukshu or somebody who's really gaining this knowledge, Bhagavan makes sure to test you in all possible ways so that you can become really big. Mm-hmm. Probably does it even when you're samsari, but there's so many, your mind is being dragged around in so many different directions that you probably don't think about it that way. But for us, these zingers that come along, you know, the big and very difficult, challenging things, they are our sadhana, and we have to become big enough to accommodate them. And you know, if you're not big enough and you think that that's going to work for you, I know that it doesn't. It just doesn't work. If you think that you can decide, well, in this case, you know, I'm just going to get rid of that person, it doesn't work because you feel bad. You feel bad at doing that type of rejection. Yeah, it won't work for you. So you're put in a situation where you have to grow. You're forced into growing because even though you would like to knock somebody off here and there. You feel really bad. Because that's not what Bhagavan's plan is. You know. So you're not allowed to do that. Yeah. You have to grow. Yeah. That's how it is. I'm positive of it. I've had enough life to know, enough experiences of realizing that you can't shortcut like that. You can't hurt another person for your own sake. you know, it doesn't work. You know, like you're a crazy monster and I don't want you around. What? I'm not a crazy monster. Can you say something about how one can handle and take? Just a second. Handle and look at serious illness from a karmic and prasadam perspective. And do you believe that getting this knowledge and more understanding that you are Ishwara and the relation that comes with that can heal serious illnesses? Well, I mean, I think that serious physical illness is really hard to handle. It's very challenging to handle it, you know, but you're stuck with it, you know. And even as you get older, so you get cancer, some god-awful thing, you're stuck with it. And if you have, say, Vedanta, then you can just receive it as, you know, it's my karma. I have to take it as prasad, and I just have to grow, and this has to become a medium for my growth. That's how I would imagine for myself I would look at it. You know, I have it, it's here, you know. As far as I know, I can't get rid of it, at least for this moment. And so it becomes my sadhana, and it's challenging. Because who wants to be physically limited, you know? Nobody wants that, you know? Or to lose some of your sense organs or anything like that, you know? That's very, very challenging. But at the same time, though it's challenging, it's more challenging for you than the one who has that. Because the one who has that, your whole karma, you know, supports that. And who you are as a person supports that. So you have what you need to handle it, but it's come in your life, and that is your sadhana. You know? And you just take it as prasad from Ishwara, and you grow with it, and you do the best, and you live your life, you know, taking care of this baby. You know, it's like taking care of a child. You have to take care of the illness or whatever it is, you know, in a loving and compassionate way. Like, you don't want to beat up your finger, you know. So you have to take care of this body and try to cure it. And I don't know, not just because you have knowledge, that won't be a miracle cure. On the other hand, there are, through different modalities, there are a lot of cures out there, and there are a lot of cures that take place through prayer. There's so many, many instances of that. So you can't negate all of that also. So I don't even know what to say about it. Maybe your prarabdha, like again, if you were to look into your astrology chart, maybe dealing with a particular illness, something that's debilitating, is something that's there in the chart that is your karma for this lifetime. But there might be something in the chart that's saying, you know, you will suffer from this karma, but it's this illness, but it's possible to get over it. That's for people who are astrologers, and they really, in Jyotish, they really look deeply into that. You know, you can feel that with, you can try through different modalities where there's some success, you try to make it better. And Bhagavan says yes or no. Maybe you try to make it better and it doesn't get that much better. It gets a little bit better. Then you can take that as prasad. And, okay, let me try this too. And then take those results as prasad. You know? And you keep doing what it takes to try to balance out the system and look for new, and then I'm just talking personally for myself now, look for cures or ways of healing it that are not so AMA the American Medical Association mainstream. Because I think I don't have any shraddha in most of those cures. I think that they're out to keep you sick. And in fact, I don't have a very positive. But I do have from a lot of the different types of alternative medicines and cures that have been there for decades that have been suppressed because it's threatening to the pharmaceutical companies and all of that. I would look into that level of cures. You know, that's why I've suggested there's Ayurveda and there's also Garrison method. There's all of these different types of modalities that make so much sense and seem curative. So for some really illnesses that the AMA has no hope for curing, they have no idea. Like Garrison's therapy, have you ever heard of that? He was a doctor from Germany, I think. There, you can look it up on YouTube and find out a lot about it, but it all has to do with eating certain organic natural foods, but also having different types of coffee, enemas, and things which excite the liver to pull out all of the toxins from the body. And they've had tremendous success for cancer and tumors and all different kinds of illnesses, you know. But of course, he was so blackballed by the Congress. First, they were very excited, and then the pharmaceuticals and medical profession came in and they just blackballed him completely, along with many other really positive curative techniques and modalities that are out there. But they're still out there, and the people who are ill and open-minded and not totally brainwashed by the medical profession, like going to the doctor in the white coat who's supposed to know. Because a lot of people, no matter what, their shraddha is only in this medical profession, the AMA medical profession. That's what they believe in. And even though these other cures are out there, they believe in their doctors. They don't have shraddha. And so they won't try other things. You know, it's really a sad thing. Majority of the people are like it. But there's some different types of modalities that are out there that are really extraordinary. And you just have to start researching into them and find one that may be working. And you call and you ask, you know, is this particular ailment, is this something that you've had success with? It's not just cancer. There's other things. Like with Garrison, there's other things. A lot of other things. And there's other modalities also that have been really successful. So I think that there's a lot of hope, and there's no reason not to try to cure an illness that is there, unless there's such a thing that it simply has no cure, you know, and then you just have to live with it. You have to live with it anyway, but that doesn't mean you can't be looking around to see if there's some positive ways of treating it, you know, because I think there are much more than people are aware of. So. We're going to do maybe one more. Because now we have more than four. but the thing is that we don't really have any more verses, so we can actually spend time on questions if you want to. Mm-hmm. Questions and meditation, talking about the things that are important. Would that be good? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. How can we live life without having any expectations, not wanting certain things to be in a certain way? Is that the way to find a happier life? Okay, yeah, this is not exactly what it is. We do have expectations, you know. We do have expectations. We do have desires. We do try to do something in order for a certain result. That is fine. And that can be just your prarabdha also. That's what you're supposed to be doing. What causes the problem is not that. It's what happens to you when you don't get your way. You know, when you're trying to get a certain result, but you don't get that result. That's where the prasada buddhi comes in. You do what you can. You're doing this particular action with an expectation. Or Or why would you do it? You know?
Of course you have an expectation. But you receive the results of your actions as with that prasada buddhi, with as Ishwara. And then there's no reaction to that, then that's just grace. You receive it as a gift from Ishwara. And then if you want to still try to do the same thing, you try to do it a little differently. And that result you also take as prasad. You know, and that's where the problem comes in. It's not with the action, like in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan says to Krishna, you know, you be responsible for your actions, but always receive the results as prasad from me. I'm responsible for the results. So you do what needs to be done. Don't become lazy. Don't become docile. You know, you do what needs to be done, but you receive the results with that prasada buddhi. It's a beautiful verse. Swamiji looks at that, I think it's in chapter 6, I think. Looks at that verse as a critical verse in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, because that is the whole karma yoga. So while my raga dvesha drop off and I enjoy just doing whatever is my dharma, I'm not really even bound by trying to do things so I could be happy. We don't even think like that. Because I'm the ananda, you know. But then here you are in this world. You know, and so you do what is here to be done. And then when raga dveshas come up or some issues come up, then it's either a sadhana for you or it's not. If it's not a sadhana, that means it's not a problem. You just handle it, the things that come up. You don't have this feeling like, I need you to leave so I can be happy. Or I need you to be here so I can be happy, or I need the situation to be like this so I can be happy. If you don't have that feeling, then you're just objectively dealing with what Bhagavan is handing you at the moment. It's no problem, you know. But say you have raga dvesha, like I really want this, I really want to have this, I want to make this a success or whatever, you know. Then you go ahead and you do it and you try, and then you accept all the while the results that you're getting as from Bhagavan. So that's okay then. You know? I'm still free to act and use my energy and to go after my desires, because those desires are there. You don't want to say, you know, you don't want to try to swallow your desire. If there's nothing wrong with it, if it's a dharma or something, then you don't. Then you have a reason not to do it. But if you have a desire and there's no adharma in it, you should have the freedom and the energy to go for it. But then you accept the results always. You're always in relationship with Ishwara. Accept it with that prasada buddhi. And then life becomes much, much easier. You're always in relationship with Ishwara. Because you always are in relationship with Ishwara. You just don't know it. But if you know it, then you can really love that. Love that relationship and love being held in that way. You love being held by Ishwara, which you actually are held by Ishwara, but you don't know it. But then when you know it, you relax more and more into that and just see what the creation is giving to you at every given moment. It's really beautiful. And then you do your best. So I just do my best. I do what's there to be done every day, and I do it to the best of my ability. And sometimes, he will say also sometimes that my best might not be good enough. But I do my best. And if it's not good enough, it's not good enough, and I try to do better or whatever. Do it in a better way next time. But I do my best. That's it. Okay, sorry, I didn't do this.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. Oh. prajabhyah paripalayanta nyayena margena mahim mahishah ko brahmanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini Desho yantro barahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhaya Om sarvesham svastir bhavatu Sarvesham shantir bhavatu Sarvesham purnam bhavatu Sarvesham mangalam bhavatu Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayah Sarve bhaktrani pasyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhavet Asato ma satgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityor ma amritangamaya Om purnamadah purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om